inhabits eternity. His name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with him who has a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. For I will not contend forever, nor will I always be angry, for the spirit would fail before me. So God knows our frame, as you can refer to Psalm 103, verse 14. He knows our frame, and he knows our weaknesses. And so when we approach God, we have to do it knowing that he is the Almighty God, and come to before him with a humble and contrite spirit. Now, if we go to Isaiah 58, verses 3 and 4, we see why God does not always acknowledge fasts or certain fasts. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen? Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? In fact, in the day of your fast you find pleasure and exploit all your laborers. Indeed, you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fist of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. So God will not listen to complaints generally and people trying to, you know, have their own political will pressed on God. And we see that all the time in our society, you know, and those aren't God's fasts. Now, in the, I'm reading from the New King James Version, and I particularly like in the reference column to different scriptures, he refers to each phrase within a verse to, you know, it says A for this and B for that, so you can get specifically where you want to go to. So I recommend that, even though there are 130 errors in the New King James, it's still one of the best translations available. Okay. Verse 5, Isaiah 58, shows a fast acceptable and pleasing to the Lord. He says, "Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow his head like a bulrush and to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast, an acceptable day to the Lord?" And the references are to, first of all, Esther 4, 3, and 16. We won't turn there, but during, you know, we all know the story of Esther and all the troubles that Hamath had caused Mordecai, and how Esther helped as queen, and they declared a three-day fast to ask God for the Jews' deliverance from Haman. And that's a good example of verse 5 in action, because God is speaking almost tongue-in-cheek, but when you reference it, this does apply here. You know, another one is Daniel 3, 9 to 19, where he prayed about all the sins of Israel and confessed Israel's sins before God. And then, of course, Gabriel finally showed up, and we know that story too, so we won't turn there. That's a good example of fasting that God does approve of. Another one, in Zechariah 7, verses 5 to 7, I'll just turn there. In Zechariah 7, verse 5, it says, "Say to all the people of the land and to the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh months during those 70 years, that's the 70 years there, did you really fast for me?" For me. Okay, so they were saving their own skin. They weren't really asking for God's help in that way. Verse 7, "Should you not have obeyed the words which the Lord proclaimed through the former prophets when Jerusalem and the cities around it were inhabited and prosperous, and the south and the lowland were inhabited?" That's an example of God saying obedience is better than fasting. Okay? And so that's something to take note of. In verse 6, back in Isaiah 58, it says, "Is this not the fast I have chosen?" And this is the essence of fasting in God's eyes. To loose the bonds of the wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you may break every yoke. And with reference to that, Luke 4, 18 and 19 shows Christ's mission, which is in Isaiah 61, 1 to 2, why he came. And essentially those are the reasons there. We won't go there either. Nehemiah 5, verse 5 and 10 to 12, if you want to make note of that, has Nehemiah deals with the oppression of the Jews who were disenfranchised. They were actually, even though they were delivered from slavery, some of the kings and nobles virtually enslaved their brother Jews, which wasn't they weren't supposed to do. And so that's another example. Another example of being, the yoke broken, the oppressed go free, and to undo the heavy burdens is something that I experienced myself. When God was calling me out of this world, I had a job that I had to, working for a Jew, of course. So, of course, I had to work every Saturday. You know, on the Day of Atonement, he'd shut the gate to the place, and he'd leave the padlock unlocked in case anybody wanted to come in and pay a bill. So that's what I had to deal with. And so having been called and, you know, getting the plain truth at the time and a few things back to where I had been as a teenager some years before, and actually 19 before I got baptized, a whole time cycle, it came up that a couple of years before somebody had asked me if I could look at a statement, a financial statement for another oil company, and I looked at it, and I wasn't interested. There was another one for sale. And well, somewhere along the line, and this is how God works, you know, when the time is right, somebody in Sun Oil, it was, executive, got word that your chief, dishwasher, whatever they called me there, executive this and that, was considering buying another business. Well, being the Jew that he was, and having earned his money the way he did, he knew that I couldn't stay there. So he took me right out of the office right there, and that was it for me. And he even got my personal effects and brought them back to the house. And so that was, you know, just the rug out from under me, my cushy, very good job, you know, well-paying job. I shouldn't call it good because I did have to work on Saturday, and I did take those calls from, out of heat. It was an oil company, so when somebody ran out of oil, they had to get credit approval for an overnight run. So to this day, I cringe when the phone rings, especially at night. But that brought me to the point of, not having a job and having to, still deal with finances and whatnot. And it gave me an opportunity to turn to God because without losing that job, I probably still would have worked there, just because I needed the money and the job. So that was a turning point. And so God did that really for me. It was a blessing. However, wrongful dismissal suits are the way you get repaid for, for being improperly dismissed. So I launched one of those. It took about 5 years. And when the time came, it was a two-day trial, and I fasted for those 2 days. And when I stood up and gave my testimony, I was hungry, but it went to me. I thought it was really well. it went well. And my lawyer said to me after he got down, he says, well, you blew it. Don't expect to win this. I had no idea what he was talking about. Well, the judge came back with his verdict and his decision. And I can never forget, he's, of course, in black robes, white hair. And if there was anyone that personified God, you know, speaking, that he was it. And everything he said in his decision went my way. You know, I got the full 9 months salary plus interest at 13% because that's what, or 20% because that's what it was at the time. And back, and my former boss, Harry Rosen, stormed out of there. You could just see the smoke running from him. And his lawyer, Lou Tepper, said to me, he said, don't spend it right away. He's going to, you know, counter, you know. So it was another 6 months, but it finally got settled at a little less money. But to me, that was an answer from fasting and, you know, asking God for his favor. And I really did get it. And it was, you know, a blessing. And that's the other example of results from fasting that I wanted to do today. And we'll just continue on here in verse 7 about fasting. God says, is it not to share your bread with the hungry that you and that you bring your house to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh. So look after your own family. How many of us have brought a stranger home from the streets and gave him a nice bed to... I've never done that. And feeding the hungry, well, sometimes you might... one, that's good. Because that is, you know, the essence. These things are the essence of Christianity. As we discussed earlier, you know, we can go to James and see that our works, assisting brethren, demonstrates our faith by our works in James 2, 14 to 17. And the Good Samaritan parable that Christ gave shows that our neighbors are included. You know, it's not just people in the church. It's people we see that need our help. So that's something to think about. But one thing I'd like to, in this regard, turn to is Matthew 25. Matthew 25, 34 to 40. Christ said in a parable here, the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. We did have a program in worldwide where we visited people in prison, and I've been there. They happened to also be brethren in the church at the time, not necessarily baptized. But anyway, and it goes on. Then the righteous will answer and say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did you see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. So we don't know who we're helping out necessarily, even a stranger. And they might end up in God's church one day, perhaps from our own help. So those are things to think about. And verse 9, Isaiah 58, when you do these things, then you shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry and he will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness or malice, it says in another type of verse. So at the end of the story, God can and does deliver us from all our trials and temptations. if we come before him with a humble, contrite, and repentant attitude.